We now have Governor Deval Patrick available. He's going to be here to take your calls. You can reach us at 1-800-423-8255. Again, that's 1-800-423-TALK. Governor Patrick, are you with us?
Sasha, I'm here, and I'm so sorry I'm not in the studio. I had every intention of being there, but I've been at a meeting with mothers who have lost children to violence, and it was just the wrong time to get up and go, and I hope you'll understand.
Sure, and I understand you're now leaving that Roxbury event, and we actually have you on your cell phone in transit, possibly in your car, and maybe we'll have you in the studio before the hour's up.
Well, we are pointed in that direction, that's right.
Great. So, Governor, let me recap. This is obviously a tight race for re-election for you. Voters go to the polls a week from today. Last night, you and your three opponents had your final debate. You've basically said that with you at the helm, Massachusetts has weathered this recession better than the rest of the country. In fact, last month, the state's unemployment rate dropped to its lowest level in more than a year. But as you know, Massachusetts shed jobs at the same time. So meanwhile, you have a slim lead in the polls, probably too slim for anyone to call this race with confidence. So first, listeners, again, we're taking your calls 1-800-423-8255. Governor Patrick is here to hear your comments and questions. We want to know if he has your vote or what he needs to get it or how he lost it. Again, 1-800-423-8255. Governor, why don't we talk first about those jobs figures? Again, they can be spun both ways, really. On one hand, the unemployment rate dropped from 8.8% to 8.4%. These are the numbers most recently before the election. At the same time, a separate jobs report says the state lost 21,000 jobs in that same period. Probably people who decided, why am I looking? I won't find something. I'm just going to drop out. There are surely unemployed people listening right now. What do you say to them, Governor Patrick, and not just policy points?
Well, first of all, let's get the facts right. It's not spin. The unemployment rate did have the largest single job drop in a month in over 30 years, and at 8.4%, we're below the national unemployment rate, which is 9.6%. The jobs report is mixed, frankly. I mean, Charlie, of course, is focused on the report that said we lost 20,000 jobs. At the same time, there was a report that said we gained 14,000 jobs. We're net ahead this year and gaining jobs faster than 46 other states, according to the Philadelphia Fed. I think if you're the one who got one of those jobs in the course of the last year, as we've been recovering, it's great news for you and your family. And if you're not, it's hopeful news. And I think, by the way, to the point you made, Sasha, and I've heard others make, that the reason the unemployment rate has gone down is because folks have stopped looking. There's absolutely no evidence of that, in fact. In fact, applications for unemployment benefits have gone down.
So for people who are unemployed still, would your advice simply be keep looking, don't give up?
Absolutely. And I would say use the career centers. Do not be discouraged. We are growing out of this. It's not over. We're turning the corner. I wouldn't declare victory yet, but because we've made decisions to invest in education and in healthcare and in job creation, we are getting benefits ahead of the rest of the country. The whole country's in this hole, but we're climbing out of it faster, and I'm determined to stick to this until everybody who's looking for work can find it.
So, Governor, many of your comments about unemployment and also many of your comments on where you have put money into job creation focus on newer white-collar industries such as biotech. If you're reelected, what would you do to provide jobs for unemployed heads of families with little or no college education who aren't eligible for those white-collar biotech-like jobs?
I'm so glad you asked the question because the premise of it isn't correct. I've heard that more times that folks think that this is all about folks in lab coats or with PhDs. It's not by any means. You know, in July, when we had the largest single monthly gain in jobs in 20 years, we had twice as many manufacturing jobs created than we did professional and technical. And that's because in these innovation sectors, in life sciences and biotech, and IT, in clean tech, we're increasingly making the things, Sasha, that we invent here. So medical devices and biopharmaceuticals that are manufacturing jobs. We're making the components for wind farms down in New Bedford and elsewhere today, and the wind blades. These are manufacturing jobs. the same is happening in IT and IT in the context of robotics and video game production and so forth. So this is happening throughout the skill level, if you will.
So you say manufacturing is not dead. Even people who don't have the fancier degrees may be able to find jobs somewhere, you think?
That's right. And it's a different kind of manufacturing. That's the thing. You know, there's certain kinds of manufacturing that makes sense in Massachusetts around those innovation industries, and that's what we've been trying to emphasize, and we're getting some results there.
Governor,
I want to just say is, if I have a minute, may I?
Sure.
Is that most of the businesses in the Commonwealth are small, 50 people and fewer. That's 85% of the businesses here. And many of them started by families working together or working with a neighbor, and their needs are met by access to capital and controlling healthcare costs. And we've got strategies for both of those that we've implemented, new legislation we've passed, which will help. Because, frankly, if they don't start hiring, we don't get a recovery.
Governor, we have a number of callers who have questions for you. So I want to go to some of those callers. And let me start with someone from Plymouth. This is Jason. Jason, you say you're actually voting for Patrick, but you still have a question for him.
Yes, I plan on voting for Governor Patrick because of the stand that he made against the legislature about the casino gambling no bid to the two racetracks. But my question to the governor is this. Is the casino gambling dead? Will you be able to effect a compromise with the legislature despite your stand on having no bid contracts to the two racetracks? And thank you for your stand.
Sure. Well, thank you for your question and for your support. I don't think that the casino bill is dead. You're right. My position is that we should not be, and I will not support no bid contracts for track owners because I think that's precisely the kind of business that you, as usual, that I was sent to Beacon Hill to change, and that we've been working so hard to change. I think that a limited expansion of gaming is appropriate in the Commonwealth, and that doing it in the context of destination resorts is right and can work for us. And I've sent the bill back. With a proposal that the legislature come in and enact what we have all agreed on, which is those destination resorts, and we save our differences for another day. My hope is that after the election, in conversation with the leadership, that they'll be willing to call members back in, and maybe we can get this done before the end of this calendar year. Otherwise, I am almost certain it will come up in the coming session, in the next session.
Governor,
it would be great not to have to go back to the drawing board.
Governor, as you just said, you do support a limited expansion of gaming. You like the idea of destination resorts, but you weren't able to make that happen in the past few months. And I wonder if, given that we have Democratic majorities in the State House, does it alarm you that even given those majorities, and of course you're a Democrat, you weren't able to make this happen? Does that show that if you're reelected, you're facing more battles where there's just where things can't get done?
No. First of all, folks aren't voting on this on party lines, and they shouldn't. This is a principled difference. And I think we ought to be permitted to have principled differences even within parties. I'd also say that when you look at things like the Achievement Gap Bill, the Ed Reform Bill, the Transportation Reform Bill, civilian flaggers at state construction sites, the Ethics and Lobbying Bill, the Cori Reform Bill, the Autism Bill, we've had some of the most productive legislative sessions in 30 years. So the charge, if that's what it is, that we're not able to get stuff done. It's just belied by the evidence. And I'd say one other thing. Unlike a whole lot of other states, we've had four budgets now that were responsible, balanced, and on time. And that's taken a lot of really hard work through some very, very difficult decisions and working together with the legislature.
Governor Patrick, by supporting even casinos in a limited degree, you certainly have put yourself in opposition of some Democrats who are just flatly against them. Do you think you have hurt yourself politically by taking that stand?
I'm not thinking about it politically. I'm thinking about what is in the best interest of the whole of the Commonwealth over time. And I've done the job that way from the beginning, just as I promised I would. And sometimes those decisions are going to fall in favor of my supporters and friends, and sometimes they're not. But the job hasn't been done that way for a long time. You know, it's usually been done with politics central to it. I've been thinking about how to leave a better Commonwealth. And as I say, I think that's the politics of conviction. That's what I said I would bring. That's what I've been about.
Governor, we have another caller. This is an undecided voter from Pelham, and this is Bill. And Bill, what's your question or comment for Governor Deval Patrick?
Hi, Governor. Thank you for taking my call today.
Yes.
Two things. My property taxes and my health insurance have both gone up in the last 3 years 68%. That's an additional $7,500 more than 3 years ago. That's unsustainable. And I realize the economy's been bad. It's affected my business. My question is, you had two chances to affect property taxes. One with the casino bill, you were essentially in agreement with the legislature.
Yes.
The other one, a home rule petition with for cities and towns that put the taxes over to the state health insurance, and that didn't make it to the House floor. These are crucial, not directly economy-related. They didn't get done. What can I hear from you that will say concretely what you're going to do to affect these things? Because I can't
take another
75.
Well, first of all, thank you, Bill, for the question. I think I'm the only one in the race who still believes that trying to curb property taxes is worth it. I think the other candidates are just saying, look, that's a consequence of making cuts or of not supporting this or that. I think that giving cities and towns tools to take the pressure off the property tax is what we've been trying to do. That's why we passed legislation to move municipal employees into the state health care system, which is less expensive, and to move the underperforming local pension plans into the state plan, which saves local cities and towns money, and also to permit cities and towns to raise revenue independent of local aid through the local option meal or hotel tax and eliminating that telecom exemption. The next big frontier, I think, is to encourage cities and towns to move municipal retirees into Medicare, which they can do today. They don't need any new legislation to do, and would save tens of millions of dollars across the Commonwealth. A few cities and towns have done it, nowhere near enough. And in fact, Bill, what they've asked is that the legislature pass a law requiring them to do it. They don't need any new law. They just have to have a vote of the town council or the city council, as the case may be. On health care premiums, I think this is one of those areas where, frankly, I just lost my patience this year dealing with the leading lights in the industry for 2 years who have sat around the table talking about how complex this is, while costs go up double digits every year at a time when everything else is either flat or declining. And that's why we capped rate increases this past year as a temporary measure, why we permitted small businesses in legislation I signed in August to buy in co-ops so that they could get the buying power that big businesses and the state has, and why we need to move on payment reform, which is a big, big change. That moves us from paying for the amount of health care to paying for the outcome or quality of that care.
Governor Patrick,
that's legislation that we'll move on in the first of January.
Governor Patrick, Bill's initial question dealt with taxes, and correct me if I'm wrong, but on one hand, he raised property taxes. Correct me again if I'm wrong. I believe that one of your major campaign platforms when you ran 4 years ago was to try to curb property tax increases, and you haven't been able to do that. I wonder if you consider this one of the unfinished items on your list.
I do, but I will say that the way to get the pressure off the property tax is with these very tools that I was talking about in response to Bill's question, so that as the economy revives, and it is gradually reviving, there will be ways that cities and towns won't have to turn to increases in the property taxes to deliver the services that people want.
Listeners, we're talking to Governor Deval Patrick. He's here to take calls or comments you have. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Governor Patrick, another tax question. Ballot question 3, of course, is the one that would slash the state sales tax by more than half. It would drop it down to 3%. You have called the prospect of that kind of slashing of the sales tax a calamity. You've also said that the resulting cuts to the budget would have to come straight off the top. Paint for us a real-life picture of what you believe that calamity would be, because, of course, some people think there is still fat in the budget, and it really doesn't have to be quite so calamitous.
Well, it's $2.5 billion. This is on top of $4.3 billion we've already cut from state spending. And by the way, we've cut over four times as much from state spending as we added in new revenues through the sales tax increase, for example. So take $2.5 billion off. What it means is that property taxes go up, to Bill's question, because local aid gets hit. It means that tolls on the turnpike or fares on the T and on commuter rail go up. It means that the school building assistance program, which gets a penny on the sales tax today, disappears. So the program that the treasurer has been, I think, rightfully boasting about in the course of the campaign is over. it means local services go down. And, you know, you can, I've listened to Charlie Baker talk about his ideas. They are valued at about $500 million. If all of them were implemented, we'd still be only, we'd still have a $2 billion problem. So I think, you know, I can certainly understand what's motivating question three. None of us who pay taxes want our taxes to be high or to go up. And everybody wants them to go down. Charlie Baker's company paid zero taxes, and he still talks about wanting taxes to be lower. I understand that, and it's a crummy time. People just don't have very much money.
Governor, but as you know, this ballot question now is roughly 50-50, I think. More people are feeling wary about it than before, but there are certainly people who say they want to see that sales tax slashed. And, you know, I'm thinking about the recent Globe investigative series about the probation department, you know, on the commissioner hiring, I think, upwards of 200 family and friends. I wonder, when you see and read stories like that, how much do you think we can continue to take fat out of government, and how much would that go towards the $2.5 billion that the slashed sales tax might require cutting?
Well, I think first of all, that there are always opportunities to gain efficiencies. But remember, we're not starting from ground zero. We've consolidated or eliminated over 20 different agencies. We shut down the Turnpike Authority. How long have we been talking about that? We've got civilian flaggers, state construction sites. We've done furloughs, pay freezes, and contract concessions with the public employee unions in order to deal with an historic budget gap over the last couple of years. So it's not like we're starting from ground zero, if you will. I think that probation department is a mess, and I have for some while, which is the reason why almost a year ago now, long before the Globe spotlight, I filed legislation to take over probation, to move it into the executive branch, now into the courts, to combine it with parole and shed some light on it. And in fact, I have vetoed funding for probation. That veto's been overridden by the legislature. So the fact that that through press attention and public attention, we're able to actually move on some reform over there, I think, is enormously important.
Governor, we have
but
a caller.
Sasha, the other thing I would say, excuse me, just before we go to the caller. You know, I've noticed. You know, we've reduced headcount in state government by over 3,000 positions in the last couple of years. The state government is smaller today than it was when I took office in 2007. And but when a factory lets go 1,000 people, everybody says what a tragedy. When state government lets go 1,000 people, everyone says good. And in either case, there's someone's family who has got to be looked after, kids who have to be educated and so forth. It doesn't mean we aren't doing what has to be done. But I think it's important to see the human beings behind these decisions.
We have a caller from Chelmsford. This is Rebecca. And Rebecca, what is your question for Governor Patrick?
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. It's just a busy week. I was just going to ask, I am new to the area. I just moved to the state, actually, from South Carolina.
And
I'm I'm a public school teacher. And when I moved up here, it was extremely difficult for me to find a job due to the cuts that have happened in education. And many programs have been cut. Many schools have had to let teachers go. And I was wondering what you were planning on doing to prevent further cuts from education so that I don't have to worry about losing my job and we can increase the quality of education these students are receiving.
Well, Rebecca, thanks for the question. I'm proud of the fact that during the worst economy in living memory, we have maintained state support for public schools at the highest level in the history of the Commonwealth. That's the Chapter 70 formula. Many, many local communities are making many, many different kinds of decisions at the local level. But at the state level, I'm proud of the fact that we've maintained funding at the level we have. I think that's been made possible through some choices that we've had to make, not to do things in other areas, and also the help of federal stimulus, which has been enormously helpful in the last couple of years in particular.
But of course, Governor, if I could jump in, Governor, of course, local aid to cities and towns has been cut and may have to be cut more, so that doesn't bode well, particularly for schools.
Well, actually, Chapter 70 is what's for schools, and that has been maintained at or above pre-recession levels, in fact, above pre-recession levels. It's unrestricted local aid that has been cut, and in every instance when we've done so, we have offered new tools to save money to cities and towns. And I think that's exactly what we have to be about right now. The irony of the times is such that you hear folks say, quite understandably, they want their taxes to be lower, they want this or that to be cut, but not their program, not the one that touches them. They don't want their services affected. And I think the job of governor is to be candid with folks about the choices that we have to make and the balance that we're trying to strike. And the choices we've been making are in favor of education, in favor of health care, and also job creation.
Governor, we have another caller. This was a caller who says his or her name is Cheney, and from Thayer. And the caller says he or she's an undocumented immigrant. And hi, what is your question for Governor Deval Patrick?
Hi, Mr. Governor. My name is Cheney from Ayer, Massachusetts.
I'm sorry, Ayer.
I've been living here. Yes. I have been living in Massachusetts for almost 10 years, December 2010. If you get elected once again, what is your position when it comes to driver's license? Because you had promised before and nothing happened.
Cheney, the opinion of public safety officials is that everybody who drives on our roads should have a license and should be familiar with the rules of the road and be certified, in effect, through a license to do so. But there is federal law in place today that makes it impossible for any state to do that on its own. And that is an obstacle that, without a change in federal law, we cannot surmount. So that is the state of play. Now, I would ask you humbly, but fervently, to get your immigration status straightened out here in the Commonwealth and in this country, because that is a problem, and it's got to be made right. There are ways to make it right, and I hope, Jeannie, that you will undertake to do so.
Governor, we have another question related to immigration. This is Jean from Lowell. And Jean, what is your question?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jean.
Thank you, Governor, for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to know exactly what the governor thinks about immigration and what is his plan, because I have a lot of friends and family members that came here like me 9 years ago, but they were not able to, even though they have an education, they were not able to be legalized as citizens in this country, and they're thinking about moving next door to Canada and so forth, and they have family members here. So I wanted to know what the governor really, what is his plan about immigration. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Well, Jean, thank you. First of all, I think illegal immigration is a serious national problem. I think it deserves a serious national solution, and I think that's got to be a combination of better and stronger border control, but also a pathway to citizenship for people who are here and contributing. So we bring this economy out of the shadows and into the light. And I think that those changes in rules have to be consistent with our best values. I don't feel like we have right now a serious national discussion about immigration. I think we have a lot of scapegoating and a lot of fear-mongering. 4 out of the 5 immigrants here in the Commonwealth today are here legally, fully documented, and they get swept up in our concern about illegal immigration, and that concerns me and ought to concern anybody who is a leader here or who wants to be. I think in terms of state services, we have rules in place that assure that only those eligible for state public services get those state public services, and we enforce those rules today. And I stand by those rules. I think they are the right rules. So I think that the question, Sean, you may be asking is a question that can only be solved at the federal level, because it's federal immigration law is federal law, and I would be anxious to work in a constructive effort to try to get real national immigration reform.
Governor, another tax question for you, and I want you to first hear a little piece from last night's debate. This is you talking to Charlie, talking back and forth to Charlie Baker.
What I've seen, Governor, is somebody who's proposed a tax increase every single year you've been governor.
Charlie?
Somebody who talked 2 weeks ago when you got asked, will I raise taxes? Oh, excuse me. When are taxes going to stop going up? Your answer was, well, maybe we need a progressive income tax. And that's
wrong,
exactly
Charlie.
The wrong message.
Wrong
to
again.
To businesses.
Wrong,
that's
wrong
not
again.
Wrong government.
Wrong.
That's
it
what
is,
you
it,
said.
It's exactly
That's what you
wrong.
Said.
I was there. I know what I said. You were not.
I've seen the video.
Well, you should watch it all instead of just a instead of just an out of context clip.
Governor, I wonder, in your view, what would be wrong with a progressive tax, assuming you think something would be wrong with it? Right now, the income tax in the state is a flat rate, but basically, the federal income tax is progressive for all but the richest 1%. So, why such a strong reaction to Baker's progressive tax comment?
Because it's not an issue in the race, and he's trying to make it one. I was at a Chamber of Commerce event up on the North Shore. I was asked a question about what I think about a progressive tax, and I said what I have said for years, which is long before I was governor, that I think a progressive tax is fair. That doesn't turn it into an issue in the race. Nobody's proposed it. It's not on the table. And what Charlie is doing, and what I think a lot of people in public life do today and in campaigns, is they make the whole question of revenue a dirty word. You know, I get totally that it is the citizens' money. It's the people's money. But it's also the people's broken roads and broken neighborhoods and broken neighbors, for that matter. And sooner or later, we're going to have to start having a mature conversation about that and not treating the whole question of taxes as a dirty word.
Governor, We received an email this morning from a listener named Keith, who's from Medford. And he said that he pointed out that many people who live in New Hampshire cross the Massachusetts border every day to come to Massachusetts jobs, often in the high tech industry. And he points out that those New Hampshire residents don't have to pay our higher property or income taxes. So he wonders, why not put tolls on the Massachusetts border so those people are charged? Well, what about that? Is that likely? Could that be a good revenue source?
Well, first of all, it's so interesting to me how we compare ourselves to New Hampshire, a state I love, but that has the highest property taxes per capita, I think, of almost any state in the country, and half of whose population live on the border and come to Massachusetts to work. Those who do do contribute through income taxes, and the question of a border toll comes up from time to time. It has to be vetted through the through federal authorities because it's an interstate highway, and there are an awful lot of border communities, Sasha, who express misgivings about it because they're afraid that folks will get off the interstate and jump on local roads and so forth and wear them out and disrupt neighborhoods. Conceptually, I get it, but practically, that's a pretty big and complicated step.
I want to play another brief clip from last night. This deals with health care, and here's that piece.
When you're in office, first month, what you're going to do?
The very first thing we're going to do is to get to work trying to continue the work bringing the cost of health care down, because that is the single biggest concern for small businesses, medium businesses, and large businesses alike.
Now, when it comes to health care, obviously we can get into sort of wonk talk very quickly, and I don't want to do that, but you...
I know, it's really a problem.
But you have said that you want to pursue what, this will sound wonky, but it's a global payment system. Basically, the very general idea is there's a cap on how much a doctor can spend on each patient per year. The idea is be more efficient, try not to go over your cap. People say that will help drive down costs because now there's very little incentive not to to just test and test and test. How do you plan, though, to convince both doctors and patients that this isn't going to, who are very frightened of this idea, that this is actually a good way to go?
Well, frankly, actually, it's a recommendation, a set of recommendations that come unanimously from the healthcare industry themselves. So, I didn't dream this up. This comes from having the leading lights in the industry around the table for the last couple years. Now, they also appreciate that there are some things we're going to have to do in the event that patient, let's say I get a debilitating illness, then we have to make sure that they are provided for. We don't want to say that the job of the doctor is to provide for general wellness and then some profound illness comes along unexpectedly and there's no provision for it. And that is a problem with the so-called capitation system that happened in other places before. We want to make sure that doesn't happen this time around.
We have another... Go ahead.
I think it can be done. It's going to be hard, but we better be willing to take on the hard stuff if we really want to bend this cost curve. And if we don't, then, you know, the concerns for small businesses, for working families, of these double-digit increases year over year, we will see as being just as unsustainable as I think they are.
We have another caller who wants to raise another issue. This is Charles, who's a teacher from Framingham. And Charles, what's your question for Governor Packer?
Hi, Charles.
Hey, Governor. I'm a big fan, strong supporter, but I do have a question for you. there has been so much ranting and raving about public employees at the trough and everything that we're getting, and I haven't heard you address that argument and take the wind out of the sails. As you heard, I'm a teacher. Teachers do not get matching funds into 401ks.
Right.
We have to have master's degrees in this state, which we pay for because we don't get tuition reimbursement. We have to pay for our licenses. You know how much money we pay individually in the classrooms to help our students.
Yes.
And then we, every 5 years, we have to have enough continuing education credits, much of which we pay for.
Right.
And I don't understand why, not to mention our pension, which we contribute 11.5% to, which is double what people contribute to Social Security. And my question for you is, why haven't you addressed this specifically when your opponents come at you and say, let's tell the truth here?
Thank you for the points, Charles, and let me also say thank you for your service. For you, Sasha, and the other listeners, our students perform at the top of the nation in student achievement and have for each of the last 3 or 4 years, and that's because of our teachers. And I thank you for that. I think that there are, I have to tell you, working as I do with and around public employees today, I feel like they are a much maligned workforce. Until a teacher sparks a love of learning in an individual student, or until the water main breaks out in Weston, and instead of 5 weeks of contaminated water, that gets fixed in 3 days, or until the water is rushing over weakened dams in Waltham because of the extraordinary rains a year ago, and you see a public employee strap on a lifeline and crawl out in that icy water to try to lift the boards to relieve the pressure on the dam so that there isn't damage downstream. And I see that kind of service every day. And so when I'm out there making, and I tried to make this point a little earlier in the broadcast, Charles, when I'm out there listening to folks and making the decisions I have had to make in terms of reducing headcount or asking for concessions or making changes in the pension program and so forth, I'm not doing it because I have a disdain for public employees. I'm doing it because I'm doing it very mindful of the sense of public service that overwhelmingly public employees bring to the job. And I appreciate your point. Let me just say one last thing about the pension system, Charles. People don't, I think, fully appreciate that in most cases today, public employees get out of the pension system what they pay in. And the average pension is about $27,000. The overhang we have has to do with a whole bunch of games that have been played for a long time by senior folks, and we ended those games with the first pension reform bill that we passed this year.
Governor Patrick, very briefly, I want to ask you one final question. If you could not vote for yourself in this race, who would you vote for? Charlie Baker, Tim Cahill, or Jill Stein?
Sasha, it's a perfectly fair point, but I'm voting for myself.
So you're gonna—that's a dodge. Is that a dodge to that question?
That's a dodge, and I respect the others. I really do. And we spend enough time with each other. I find I like them. We just have very, very different views about the role of government. My own is that government should be about helping people help themselves.
Thank you for coming on.
And the choices we would make.
Thank you.
I appreciate Sasha very much for having me on.
We appreciate you coming on. We'll have the other candidates on the air later this week. Tune in and call us, and you can talk to them too later this week. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.